All right, good day, everybody, and happy Wednesday. We are continuing here this week with actually corporate introduction. Happy to welcome in Mick McMullen, CEO of Metals Acquisition. They do trade on the NYSE with MTAL and on the ASX with MAC. And Australia is where we find Mick. Good evening to you. Good morning to me, Mick. Thanks for doing this.
Good morning. No problems at all.
Yeah. If you are into copper plays and you are into copper producers, the CSA project in Metals Acquisition is one you should be looking at. In fact, when I started diving into this, just some eye-popping grades here from the CSA project in Australia. It's a project you picked up from Glencore not too long ago. So, Mick, maybe let's I'll give you the curtain here and give us kind of a rundown of Metals Acquisition, how you got your hands on CSA, and really just continued success of drilling here.
Yeah, sure. So I've known this mine for over 20 years. I think I first tried to buy it back in 2003. And then, as you would probably know, I've spent a fair bit of time in North America since then, moved back to Australia during COVID. We got stuck, locked up in Western Australia, couldn't leave. So we set this vehicle up as a vehicle to go and sort of try and build a mid-tier miner. We identified CSA. We looked at about 80 assets, really honed into about a dozen, and then we sort of got into detailed negotiation on four or five, of which CSA was one. And then we agreed that transaction in March of 2022. And then the vendor was Glencore, and they had to provide a set of audited financial accounts for inclusion in the prospectus, which took about 9.5 months, actually, because this sat inside a broader business group, and it took them a fair while to sort of recreate a standalone business, you know, recreate a set of standalone accounts. So long story short, we didn't close on the transaction until June of last year, which was a bit frustrating given how, you know, metal markets were up, down, and we often say time kills deals. And so this was very challenging to sort of keep it together through all of that. It's a phenomenal asset. It's one of these businesses that sat inside a major for 24 years. I even people in Australia say, oh, we know CSA, and well, how? Because it sat inside Glencore for 24 years and had no visibility, it really in the marketplace. And, you know, Glencore is sort of, they've been selling off a few of their smaller non-core assets, which is the right thing for their shareholders because, you know, whilst we can see a lot of opportunity at this mine, even if they did everything, it would never really move the needle for their shareholders, right? So they're better off focusing on the big things that will move the needle for their shareholders, and we're better off focusing on things that we can, you know, turn and get operational improvement on fairly quickly. And, you know, it's been running since 1967. We see a very long life ahead of the thing. I think it's the highest grade copper mine outside the Congo. And certainly in Australia or Canada or the US, just an amazing asset. But yeah, as I said, I first tried to buy this in 2003, I think it was.
Yeah. It is amazing. I mean, and we kind of talk about the strategy of what you're undergoing here since acquiring that last year, but I just want to highlight some of these drill results you've recently published. From the QTS North area of the project, 14 meters of 7.9% copper, 16 meters of 10.5% copper, 19 meters of 10.5% copper. At a QTS Central, there's another 11.5 meters of 11.8% copper. And then out of QTS South Upper A, and we can kind of go into this a little bit more nitty gritty here, 1.5 meters of 21.3% copper. I mean, incredible grades, and I haven't seen grades like this through the drill bit, as you write, since some of the stuff that came out of the Congo here, not too distant past. But Mick, you know, I guess, you know, what is this strategy here? Are you drilling it to improve the resource and get it to the market? Are you putting this back into operation and production? And, you know, what is kind of like the runway here for the next year or two?
Well, it was running when we bought it, and you know, it's been running with a 5 to 6 year reserve life for probably the last 50, 55 years. Certainly under Glencore's time, it's always had a short reserve life. Again, for Glencore, whether it had a 5 year reserve and they just mined a year and drilled a year, mined a year, drilled a year, didn't make any difference to Glencore, right? Whereas for us, obviously, having a, you know, an extended mine life is important. You know, the EBITDA multiple we will trade at will be bigger the longer the mine life, but also the debt structures that we can put in place, you know, are obviously better the longer the mine life. So, you know, yeah, those are the drill results we put out last week. We put some out a few months ago that, you know, actually had 50 metres at 8.9% copper and some 20s at 15s as well. And these aren't what we call director special holes. These aren't drilled, you know, down the dip of the thing. These are 80, 90, 95% true width holes, and they are just drilling the next levels of the ore body out, right? So we know the mineralization carries on for a long way past where we're currently mining based on drilling and geophysics. And so our business model has always been, you know, when I ran Stillwater or Detour and a few other things, is you put your foot on the best resource on the ground you can find in the best jurisdiction, with the most amount of excess infrastructure that has the lowest productivity. So whilst we have built mines within our group, you know, right now I don't want to be building a whole new mine. This asset, you know, has a processing plant that will do about 80,000 tonnes of copper annually. This is all metric, you know, when we talk about tonnes and metres. But, you know, it was running at about 33,000 tonnes a year annualised when we got the keys. So the haulage shafts, we're a bit unusual in Australia that we have twin haulage shafts down. You know, they don't really do shafts in Australia. We have twin shafts down about halfway down the mine, which again has significant excess capacity over what we're currently using. So again, where in the world, in a first world jurisdiction, can you find an ore body that's running 5% copper of scale, that has been running forever, that has, you know, 97.5% to 98% recovery in the processing plant into a beautiful clean concentrate? So no penalties, you know, no sort of polymetallic stuff, you know, with nasties in it. So the strategy is pretty simple, quite frankly. It is, we've got a great ore body which carries on for much more than what the resource at the time indicated. So we're drilling it with a view to both pushing out the reserve life, and we feel very comfortable that that will extend here. You know, we're working on that right now, but also identifying satellite ore bodies in and around, you know, within, let's call it 1,000 yards of the shafts that we can mine to fill up that processing plant. Because in a mine like this, about 70% of your costs are fixed. So if you have a big hungry processing plant, you have excess haulage infrastructure, you want to find as much ore as you can that you can mine incrementally and shove into that plant and get more production out the back end, because that will that will drive your cost down significantly, because 70% of your costs are fixed and the capital intensity of that is very low, because the bulk of your cost has already been sunk in the processing plant, the rail infrastructure that comes straight into the mine, the power line that comes in. So that's a pretty simple thing, right? So normally I'm not a big explorationist, but in this particular instance, when you've got, you know, literally ore bodies that just stop, that are running 11 metres at 11% and no more drilling, I think for shareholders, we can create a lot of value through drilling that for not a lot of money, actually.
Yeah. Let's talk about where you're finding this new mineralization. I mean, there's some excellent graphs in this last news release on the long sections there, highlighting the entire project. But maybe talk about QTS North, because that seems to have the most development at depth. I mean, talk to us about, it seems like this thing just keeps going deeper and deeper. I mean, have you even found the extents, or have any clue where the extents of that mineralization is at depth?
Yeah, well, and again, you're right to focus on QTS North, because that's about 75% of the resource and reserves right now. And that's where you're getting those, you know, multiple lenses that, you know, bulk out to sort of 35, 40 metres width, that are, you know, big and high grade. The resource carries on around about 350, 400 metres below where we're currently mining. and we have drill hits several hundred metres past that. And then we have geophysics that indicates it goes another 800 metres past the deepest drill hole. So this thing sort of goes to the bottom of the earth. So that's, you know, that's great. We know the thing will be there for a long time. So QTS North is sort of that's the bulk of the meat, I suppose you could say. However, that's where the bulk of your copper will come from. However, things like QTS Central, which is about 400 meters shallower, is narrower but very high grade. Actually, our highest margin ore. So we tend to try and think in terms of margin as opposed to grade. But because that's a bit shallower, you know, it is higher margin. And then as we come back up towards surface on those long sections we put in those releases, you come back up towards the surface, and right near up the surface there's a little blob called QTS South Upper, which is small, but very high grade. So it's narrow but very high grade. But again, it starts 120 metres below surface. It goes down to about 400 metres below surface. We then have a gap of about 500 metres with really not much data, or virtually no data, and then we hit the sort of what's left in QTS South, which the remaining ore in that is running about 7% copper in the block model. So again, it's all high grade and has just had very little drilling. Like, there is, when you think about the size that you need, the space you need to fit in a super high-grade ore body with a lot of copper, spatially it's very small, right? Like, some of these shoots have only got 125, 150-metre strike length. But when you get on them, they typically go down to the centre of the earth. So hard to find sometimes. And interestingly, downhole EM works really well on this, like massive sulfide running plus 10% copper. It lights up like a Christmas tree. And historically, the mine has not done downhole EM, and we actually got them to run the first downhole EM when we got the keys, and there's targets everywhere. So, again, you know, Glencore's done the right thing by their shareholders, because whether they have a 5-year reserve or a 15-year reserve on this thing, or whether they produce 35,000 tonnes of copper or 55,000 tonnes of copper, would never actually move the needle for their shareholders. But for my shareholders, if we take it from those two extremes, then clearly it's going to have a huge impact for value for our guys. So, we interestingly, the mine started out as a very high-grade zinc mine up near surface. Our resource model starts 850 metres below surface. So the data from surface to 850 metres was not in the digital database, was in the hard copy database sitting in a container at the back of the office. We've now digitized about 60% of that, and it's all old data, so it has to be replicated. But that does indicate that there's significant remnant mineralization left in that top 850 metres. We're currently working on a new resource and reserve upgrade, which we should have out during the course of April. But the cutoff for that data was the end of August. So even those drill results I put out the other day are not in the new resource. And certainly all this stuff that's in the shallower portion of the mine, which we've swung a drill rig onto, is definitely not in that new resource. So, yeah, we'll come out with something, but it'll be a snapshot in time, right? Because the data is still continuing to come in. And we've probably got another 18 months of that data to come in yet, I think, before we really know what we've got. But, you know, wow. There's been about 1.5 million tons of copper produced out of that mine so far. You know, who knows how much more we get to get out of it, but I think you know, significantly more than what the current SK1300 resource that's on the public domain is indicating, given that everything's open.
Mika, there's an interesting section here. I guess you've got declines running in through it between QTS Central and QTS North, but it doesn't have any mineralization classified in there. Like, there's a gap, but it doesn't take a geologist or a rocket science to kind of compare those two and think that potentially there would be mineralization in that area. I mean, are you going to plan on testing that? Because that obviously adds significant ounces, because it's all between measured ounces.
Well, measured tons of copper, but I think if you look at those sections, anywhere you see a straight line, that mm-hmm. means you're drilling limited. We've just got a certain spacing, and then like there's no more drilling, so then the resource stops, or the measured stops and it goes to indicated, or indicated stops goes to inferred. So mm-hmm. yep, as part of the recent ASX listing, you know, we raised $325 million. A portion of that, about 50 million Australian, let's call it 30 million US, is allocated for exploration. And the vast majority of that is really on that long section that you'd be looking at there now. It's in and around the mine, on the mining lease, stuff that we can mine in the near term because, you know, ultimately we think, okay, let's say we get a longer mine life on reserves. What are shareholders then going to pay us on? They're going to pay us on more EBITDA and more cash flow in the short term. So anything that's proximal to infrastructure that we can get into quickly is a high priority target for us. And so even if it's not huge in terms of contained copper, you know, yes, anything that's like in between existing ore bodies, extensional to existing ore bodies, even if you look on that section between QTS Central and QTS South, we have a whole series of drill hits all through there as well, which are not in a resource yet, but there's a whole series of drill hits all through there that we need to go and start drilling because, you know, quite possibly subject to drilling success, you know, those holes may sort of coalesce into another resource and yet another mining front. So the trick for this operation is have as many mining fronts open as possible to give you the most flexibility. Our single biggest constraint today is return air rise ventilation at the bottom of the mine. We have lots of fresh air coming in. We actually can't turn the fresh air up to full capacity because we don't have the ability to exhaust all the air from the bottom of the mine. So when we boil everything down, it's open up more working fronts, ventilate the mine at the bottom, or allow us to exhaust the vent so that we can really crank up the fans at surface. Mm-hmm. Then we can really start producing significantly more copper out of this thing.
Yeah. Let me ask you about your market here. You did mention the $325 million with the IPO on the ASX. And again, you trade on the NYSC as well. Just curious, you know, why not a Canadian listing? I'm starting to pick up more and more of these companies that are ASX and New York-based and forgoing the Canadian listings.
Yeah, look, I think the fact that we've got an asset in Australia with Australians, at least a portion of Australian management, the market is very parochial down in Australia. And so if you're listed here but don't have some sort of Australian nexus, then it's a much tougher sell, right? Sure. You'd know the Australian pension fund industry down here, you know, the superannuation funds are an enormous source of capital, much of which is trapped in Australia. That even if they don't have an express mandate to invest in Australian assets, there's almost like an implicit mandate to put money to work in Australia. And so like several of those funds we know, who actually a couple of them have supported us even when we were just listed on NYSE. But even a lot of those funds, you know, they might have a $20 billion domestic fund and they might have a half a billion to $1 billion offshore fund. So, you know, there is a lot of trapped money, you know, looking for mm-hmm. particularly copper exposure now. And when we look in the Australian market, there actually is no more domestic Australian copper assets of size listed here. You've got, you know, Sandfire, which is offshore, copper and zinc, done a pretty good job actually executing, big and liquid, but they're offshore. And there's not really anything else down here, right? So
we
think we can get a scarcity value. Whereas in Toronto, you know, whilst I'm pretty well known, we don't have a lot of shareholders there. I think AUM at a lot of funds has gone down in Toronto a fair bit. You know, I can sort of say that, you know, we raised that $325 million mostly with Australian funds, and we were three times oversubscribed.
Wow. All right. I'm looking at this chart, and it's, you know, it's kind of miskewed optics. So you look at the chart and say, like, well, this thing's running up. It's already up, you know, 30, 40%. But you got to pay real close attention. I mean, despite you're pushing almost $1 billion market cap. We'll say 900 million currently. But you only have, you know, 70 million shares outstanding here. So you're keeping this thing pretty dang tight. So once you start kind of getting through the weeds there, it all starts making sense. I mean, so maybe give us your thoughts on how you're approaching shareholders. If they're looking at this big move here since, you know, let's say the summer of last year, what is the investment thesis here? What, you know, why would people want to go pick up shares of Metals Acquisition?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, we have a more North American style cap structure relative to, we like to joke here in Australia, you know, like the usual 2 billion shares at 20 cents.
Yeah, right. It's a warm welcome, I must say, to see that.
we could have done a CDI on a 10-to-1 ratio or something down here, but we wanted to differentiate ourselves down in the Australian market from the average run of the mill, you know, West Perth 2 billion shares an issue type company. We're up. I wouldn't say we're up hugely. I think if you look at where copper's gone, you know, like we haven't fallen, but, you know, there's a few other copper players that are a bit more leveraged to copper than us that have probably outperformed us, you know, that because we've obviously raised a fair bit of capital, but the fact is we're very high grade and high margin. So, you know, if you're making at $3.70 copper, if you're making a 25 cent margin or a 50 cent margin and copper goes up 50 cents a pound, you doubled your margin. You know, whereas for us, you know, our margin is much bigger, right? So as a percentage improvement, you know, copper goes up 50 cents. Yep, it's great. We're making more money. That's fantastic. But we don't quite get the margin expansion as much as some of these, let's call it lower margin assets, right? So, you know, you'd know there's a few in Canada listed there that are, you know, lower margin and have more torque, I suppose, to the copper price. But that can work both ways. That's going up and coming down. So, you know, I think for us, clearly we believe that this ore body will continue to give for a long, long time still. You know, this mine had the second lowest productivity of an underground mine in Australia. And I think, you know, we've got the skill sets to improve productivity, get costs down, push production up. But yeah, like it wasn't a small equity raise that we did as part of that IPO. We think that we're likely to get into the ASX 300 here come the mid-year rebalance, which again will drive a fair bit of passive buying into the stock, I think. So catalyst-wise, you know, we will have a new resource and reserve coming out here shortly, which sort of is almost out of date by the time the ink dries on the paper, because we've got all this other drilling coming. We think we'll be able to deliver some decent news on production over the progressive courses of the quarters of the year. Again, driving costs down. And look, if you think copper's, you know, going up, I think, you know, we're in a pretty good spot there to sort of leverage off that. And again, in the Australian market in particular, we don't really have any peers anymore. And so, you know, that makes when people are sort of, other stuff's run pretty hard, you know, people are looking around for opportunities, particularly you get into that index. I think that's going to be pretty positive for the stock price.
Yeah. Mick, last question, simple yes or no. Are you done here at CSA, or are you shopping around for another asset?
Well, look, we're all about value, right? So acquisitions in the name still for a reason. We set the business up to try and build a mid-tier miner, but we're very disciplined. You know, there was another situation, it's all in the press down here in Australia, but there was another situation that we were involved in. You know, we were, you know, far along in the process. We just formed a view on value, which is not where the asset traded. And I think we did well to, you know, keep our powder dry on that one, because the eventual buyer of that stock has suffered significantly as a result of that transaction. So for us, yep, we're happy to buy stuff, happy to do deals, but it's got to make sense, right? Like it's got to be that's where true. For our shareholders, it's a pathway to create greater value.
All right, Mick, thanks so much for sharing the story. It's really, really interesting, intriguing, and might I say very cool story. And we're going to be following it. Can we follow up here in the next, I guess, weeks or months when that new resource comes out and make sure to get you back on the podcast, see what those numbers are lined up at. But appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for your time.
All right. Yeah. All right. That's your, excuse me, that's your introduction to Metals Acquisition. They do trade on the NYSE with MTAL and on the ASX with MAC. The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.